transformative. Secondly, it seems to me that the left is too involved in isolated issues. You know, we've got to bring these issues together to create a mass social movement that in some way really challenges the kind of power that we're now confronting.
Only the beginning of the conversation. Henry Giroux, thanks so much for being with us. McMaster University professor for scholarship in the public interest. His new book, America at War with Itself. That does it for our broadcast. Owan, tomorrow is a very special day. Happy birthday.
Amy, thank you.
Well, we'll be
didn't need to mention that.
We'll be broadcasting Monday from North Dakota, from right near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. Tune in. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke and Ramin Shaikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gattis, Diener, Dina Guster, Sam Malkoff, Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, Tarina Nadura, Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nagera, and Paul Huckabee, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone, Vesta Gadars. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much, and happy birthday, Juan.
KVU Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KVU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KVU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee meets the third Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kbu.org.
KVU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Friends of Noise Benefits Show on Sunday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Friends of Noise formed to create more opportunities for youth to produce, perform, and gather at all-ages music shows and raise awareness for the need of an all-ages venue. Performing at this benefit will be Explode Into Colors, Vampire, and Hugo Berlin. Again, that's Friends of Noise Benefit Show, Sunday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Mississippi Studios, 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland, the time is 5:01 p.m. And coming up next is the KBOO Evening News. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the League of Women Voters of Portland, reminding you that the last day to register to vote is Tuesday, October 18th, for the November 8th election. With an Oregon driver's license or identification, you can register online by following the links at sos.oregon.gov.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Don't Shoot Portland targets Nick Fish for recall.
Five U.S. senators have asked President Obama to call for a halt on all work on the Dakota Access Pipeline.
And Manzanita on the Oregon coast has suffered extensive damage from this morning's tornado.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 14th, 2016. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. Activists with Don't Shoot Portland have decided to focus their recall efforts on City Commissioner Nick Fish. The group had initially targeted Commissioner Amanda Fritz, but has since decided that the procedural challenges associated with the Fritz recall were too much to overcome. Both Fritz and Fish, as well as Mayor Charlie Hales, have come under fire for their support of the controversial new police union contract. Fritz in particular aroused the group's anger by questioning several components of the contract and then voting for it. The contract eliminates a rule that gives officers 48 hours before they can be questioned after shootings, but many felt it was still far too weak on police accountability. The contract does not stipulate when the police will begin wearing body cameras, although it's expected they will begin to do so next year. Once they do, the new contract allows the police to put off writing reports on any encounters until after they have had a chance to review the video. The ACLU and the NAACP have come out against the draft body camera rules. Don't Shoot Portland plans additional protests.
Wednesday's City Council vote to approve the contract with Portland Police Association was a historic moment. The events of this week have drawn national headlines and most likely a national boycott against the City of Portland by the Black Lives Matter movement. KBOO's Jared Dantzler brings us this account of the rally outside of City Hall before the City Council vote.
On October 12th, the community activist organization Don't Shoot Portland held a rally at Portland City Hall, calling attention to the city signing a contract with the Portland Police Association, a contract which has been met with increased opposition by community members. A banner was hung across the hall pillars reading Black Lives Matter, and a die-in was staged blocking the street out front City Hall. A lead organizer with Don't Shoot PDX and a law student spoke to concerns about the lack of public comment during the contract negotiation process.
They have been shutting us out of here since I think it was 3 or 4 weeks ago that we marched on to City Hall. They locked us out, and for 2 hours we were sitting in City Hall waiting to talk to the mayor about how we had been treated at our last protest, where we had things fired at our feet. We were pepper sprayed. I personally saw a lot of people hit and abused by the police. We wanted to speak to the mayor about that. He did not come out for 2 hours, and then he met with myself and some other leaders from our group where we told him he had to come out and talk to the people. He did that. He came out, he said Black Lives Matter. Ever since then, he has shown that they do not matter to him. You know, I do strongly believe in unions, and I think that everybody should be unionized. The problem is when you have a police union, the main job of a union is to increase wages and secure wages and also secure employment. But if you're securing employment for the police officer, that means that they are no longer accountable to the people. If we're making your job the most secure possible, that means that you have no accountability.
Community members are just incredibly frustrated that their voices are being shut out, that they're being shut out of a public building by their own mayor because they want to push a contract through.
I asked demonstrators what specifically they opposed about the contract.
Well, number one is the body cam issue, you know. Number two is putting police officers in our schools and stuff, you know. We need more counselors, not more policemen.
What about that?
If you hire somebody that's been in this city, that's lived in this community and interacted with this community in such a way that, you know, like for me, when I see a police officer, I don't see a member of my community. I see something else, you know.
Teresa Rayford of Don't Shoot Portland.
Oh, yeah, well, we're Don't Shoot Portland, and we just finished up a demonstration, you know, using Beyonce's song, Sorry, Middle Finger Up, Tell 'em Boy Bye, and it was basically a message to Charlie Hills that, you know, you're on the way out, you know, screw you, you can't be the one that makes the decision on this contract.
On Wednesday, despite public outcry, Portland City Council approved the contract with the Portland Police Association 3-1 in a closed door vote. For KBOO News, I'm Jared Dantzler.
Announced yesterday that they'll start a pilot program to track police use of a force across the nation. This new program comes amidst rising tension between police and communities after numerous shootings and incidents of brutality. News media has been tracking some of this data, but there's been no cohesive government effort. The Washington Post has tracked 754 fatal police encounters this year. Attorney General Loretta Lynch made the announcement, citing the need for comprehensive data to inform a productive discussion about community police relations. This program drew out of a commission appointed by President Obama in 2014 to study ways of reducing conflict and tensions between police departments and the communities they serve. The monitoring program is slated to begin in early 2017. It will be run by the FBI. It's unclear how reporting will be enforced. Civil liberties groups such as the ACLU are pushing to require financial penalties for noncompliance. The Justice Department is calling for public comment on the methodology of this program.
Thursday, five U.S. senators sent a letter to President Obama requesting a halt to the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Democratic Senators Bernie Sanders, Patrick Leahy, Dianne Feinstein, Ben Cardin, and Ed Markley want the work stopped until affected tribes are consulted and a full environmental review is conducted. FSRN's Nell Abram has more.
Five U.S. senators, led by former presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders, asked President Barack Obama Thursday to suspend all construction permits for the Dakota Access Pipeline and halt work on the nearly $4 billion four-state project. The senators requested a full stop on the pipeline until a complete environmental and cultural review is done for the entire project. In a letter to the president, the lawmakers cited not just the treaty rights of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, but also the larger implications of yet another massive fossil fuel infrastructure project on the climate crisis. The request followed a court ruling last Sunday night that refused to extend an injunction blocking work on a contested segment of the controversial pipeline. After the ruling, direct action resumed, not just in North Dakota, but across the country. In four states along the northern U.S. border with Canada, 10 people were arrested Tuesday after shutting down all five pipelines that carry tar sands oil into the country.
We are acting in response to the call to action from Standing Rock for escalated response and prayers and actions, and this is in solidarity to them.
That's Afrin Sapariwala with Climate Direct Action, the group that organized the coordinated shutdowns. She says even more than supporting indigenous water defenders fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline, the shutdowns were meant to draw attention to what Climate Direct Action calls the inadequacy of global response to the climate crisis. Last week, the European Union approved the ratification of the Paris Agreement, reaching the 55-nation threshold required to implement the international climate deal that Sapariwala says is insufficient.
Even though 192 countries signed an agreement to cap climate increase to 1.5 degrees from the baseline, there isn't a single plan that is being pushed by any government or climate organization that comes close to matching this target.
Those arrested included not only the climate activists who took direct action to shutter the pipelines, but also journalists who were on the scene. One of them, documentary filmmaker Daya Schlossberg, was charged with three felonies and faces up to 45 years in prison. Schlossberg is just one of numerous journalists who've been arrested covering the growing movement against the Dakota Access Pipeline and its broader implications. At least four reporters with the nonprofit independent media collective Unicorn Riot have been arrested covering the Standing Rock Sioux actions in North Dakota, including one this week, which the group filmed and uploaded to their website.
Sir, you're aware that you're arresting a credentialed member of the press right now?
You might be releasing.
Are you planning on releasing the credentialed member of the press that you arrested?
And Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman, who was charged after filming a private security company unleashing attack dogs on protesters, is headed back to North Dakota to answer criminal trespass charges in court next Monday. While the movement to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline grows, a coalition of groups calling for a moratorium on drilling in the Gulf of Mexico has released the results of a review of accidents in the oil industry and the frequency with which they happen, at least those that get reported. Ann Rolfes is the founding director of the Louisiana Bucket Brigade, who looked at reports filed between September 15 and October 6.
Well, in the three-week period, we found that there were 94 accidents attributed to the industry. Some of those were reports from the oil industry. Some were things that regular people observed and called in. But either way you slice it, that's over 30 accidents a week.
And that's just in and off the coast of Louisiana.
To this point in the year, there are over 1,500 accidents by the oil industry in our state. And last year, just as an example, there were 2,300. And so this is a problem that we know has gone on from year to year, where there actually are thousands of accidents every single year. And in Louisiana and along the Gulf region, it's as if we're used to this and we consider it business as usual.
The report from Louisiana is timely as the Standing Rock Sioux continue their fight not only to protect their sacred land from desecration, but also their water from the threat of potential leaks and oil spills. The Dakota Access Pipeline struggle has brought renewed solidarity between tribes across the country and indigenous peoples around the world, many of whom face their own battles against extractive industries. Another fight they've long shared is years of protest over the glorification of Christopher Columbus and the process of colonization that followed his so-called discovery of the Americas. This week, Denver, Colorado joined a short list of cities opting to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day. FSRN's Hannah Lee Myers reports.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Tomorrow's weather, rainy and windy. Winds 25 miles an hour with gusts as high as 50. East of the Cascades, also rainy, but without the wind. On this date in 1964, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for his policy of nonviolence. Among his many memorable quotes, he said, "We must develop and maintain the capacity to forgive. He who is devoid of the power to forgive is devoid of the power to love. There is some good in the worst of us and some evil in the best of us. When we discover this, we are less prone to hate our enemies."
The coastal town of Manzanita was struck by a powerful tornado at about 8:25 this morning. The storm began as a waterspout before coming ashore in the center of town. The National Weather Service has not yet rated the storm's intensity, but numerous trees and power lines came down. A number of buildings suffered severe damage along a 10-block area, but there were no reported injuries. A second tornado later struck Oceanside. Although rare, tornadoes are not unheard of in Oregon. Since 1950, about 100 have been reported, but only 4 have been rated higher than F1 on the EF scale. The Weather Service has issued a high wind advisory for coastal Oregon and Washington through Saturday evening.
And now the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
Workers Independent News Week in Review. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO Vice President Tafari Gebre joined members of a couple of dozen unions and other supporters picketing Trump's Washington, D.C. hotel Thursday. They demanded that Donald Trump stop violating labor law. Trump is refusing to negotiate with Trump Hotel Las Vegas workers who voted to join the culinary workers affiliated with Unite Here.
We had great picket with a lot of community partners, and I would say about, you know, a couple of dozen unions with their shirts showing up and trying to hold Donald Trump accountable to his workers.
If huge multinational corporations based in the U.S. paid their full income taxes, like America's working families do, they would owe $717.8 billion in taxes. Richard Phillips of Citizens for Tax Justice is one of the authors of the report Offshore Shell Games 2016.
We found that for Fortune 500 companies, they are currently holding about
$2.5 trillion, that's trillion with a T, offshore, and that we estimate that based on that, they owe about $718 billion on these earnings, which means that if Congress made them pay it back, they would actually owe $718 billion.
Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis says that while she's pleased to have reached a tentative agreement averting a Chicago teachers' strike, issues remain to work on.
Chicago Public Schools and Chicago Teachers Union has a tentative agreement. It wasn't easy, as you all know. Clearly, we had some issues, and there are some things we're going to still be working on. But what we ended up with is something that's good for kids, is good for clinicians, it's good for paraprofessionals, for teachers, for the community, and we're very pleased that we were able to come to this tentative agreement.
The agreement must be approved by the union's House of Delegates and by the membership before it becomes final. McDonald's Fight for 15 workers are demanding an end to sexual harassment on the job. Angel Mitchell, a Chicago McDonald's worker, says when management fails to stop it, a union can.
If we can't get a response from store managers, then we have our union rep to protect us.
Colorado voters will be able to take their state into single-payer universal health care at the ballot box in November. Donna Smith of Healthcare for All Colorado says voters can create Medicare for All in Colorado by voting for this ballot initiative.
Colorado Care Amendment 69 would bring universal health care to every resident of Colorado, regardless of their immigration status. We're very proud of that.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
Workers Independent News provided by Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
A Virginia college student reported that she was raped on campus and prevented from getting a medical exam until after an eight-hour interrogation by campus police. The student of Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia, filed a complaint to the Department of Education this week for the incident that occurred in October 2014. Her statement noted that when she reported the rape to campus police, they denied her food, water, and the use of a bathroom during the lengthy interrogation. The report also states that she was subjected to questioning that caused further trauma, such as, quote, "Do you like rough sex?" end quote. The report submitted by her attorney, Laura Dunn, of Seattle-based Serve Justice, states that campus police did not inform her of her right to decline to report the crime to law enforcement until after getting a medical exam. ODU police did not submit a protective order on her behalf, and the university denied her request to switch dorm rooms until after she received a diagnosis for a psychological condition. A criminal investigation was launched, but the attacker was never charged.
Donald Trump today lashed out against the growing number of women accusing him of assault. In a speech in Greensboro, North Carolina, Trump implied he had not groped and kissed the women now accusing him because they're, quote, unattractive. In related news, attorney Gloria Allred held a press conference for a former contestant on Trump's reality TV show. She's going public with allegations that the billionaire kissed and groped her against her will in 2007. A KABU News tally of alleged incidents reported so far add up to 16 examples of Trump sexually harassing women and girls. The incidents range from Trump making sexual comments about young girls nearby while he's on camera to a groping incident against a woman he did not know on the New York subway, to claims by five Miss Teen USA contestants that Trump ogled them while they were undressed backstage at the pageant. In addition, there are now at least four alleged cases of Trump groping and forcibly kissing professional women seeking career advice. Trump's first wife, Ivanka, also accused him of rape during their divorce proceedings. She later recanted the accusation while the couple reached a legal settlement.
The United Nations extended its mandate in Haiti this week for an additional 6 months, a move that many Haitians may not welcome. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is set to arrive in the devastated island nation Saturday, following the largest hurricane to make landfall there in more than 50 years. FSRN's Nell Abram has more.
The United Nations extended its mandate in Haiti this week for an additional 6 months, a move that many Haitians may not welcome. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is set to arrive in the devastated island nation Saturday, following the largest hurricane to make landfall there in more than 50 years. Hurricane Matthew slammed into the southwestern tip of the island, killing more than 1,000 people, demolishing homes, and wrecking the country's agricultural region.
It's already been 12 days after the hurricane hit, and it seems like the majority of the population in the affected areas are not even reached out to by the government as yet.
James Verneau is a resident of Port-au-Prince. He says that everyday Haitians were quick to mobilize a grassroots response to the hurricane, but first they need heavy machinery to clear blocked roads to hard-hit areas.
A lot of the roads to get to those places are not even, most of them are not even cleared out yet for transportation to be able to function.
According to the United Nations, almost 1.5 million people in the country need humanitarian aid. Half of them need urgent, life-saving assistance and protection, including almost 600,000 children.
Even though this may not be front-page news tomorrow or next week, people in Haiti are still doing this work, and there's going to be a need for long-term engagement.
Mark Schuler is the author of Humanitarian Aftershocks in Haiti and a longtime Haiti scholar and activist. He says the short-term priorities are to replace food and water stocks and to rebuild infrastructure to reestablish communication with residents in affected areas. But he also warns, this time, international agencies and organizations need to apply the lessons of the 2010 earthquake and allow the expertise of Haitian grassroots groups to direct recovery efforts.
This hurricane shows, for once and for all, the dire importance of protecting the environmental resources and to be taking a look at climate change, not just as climate change, but as climate justice, that the U.S. and the World Bank and the United Nations do need to do better in terms of how we impose our will on places like Haiti.
The hardest hit region was the impoverished nation's breadbasket, and survivors are left with little in terms of subsistence crops and herds, which were all but wiped out by the hurricane. James Verneau points out that the area was home to what little was left of Haiti's tree cover and greenery.
Those areas that are hit are peasant areas where farming is the main activity of the people. So those places were like the places that give more food to Haiti in terms of farming and vegetation and the greenery that was left there. And now 95% of all that is destroyed.
With many roads impassable and cell phone communication still largely down, the full scale of the storm's aftermath remains to be seen. But it's already clear that the destruction in key areas will have a reverberating effect on agricultural subsistence for the Haitian people who rely on the land.
Protests continue at London's Heathrow Airport, where hundreds of people staged a die-in 2 weeks ago to try to block construction of a third runway. Heathrow is already one of the largest airports in the world. The protesters say that expanding airports is the wrong direction to go, since the world is facing a severe climate crisis that requires an abrupt and immediate change in energy policy. Now, some members of the British Parliament have joined the protesters in opposing the airport expansion. They say they'll block a vote that is scheduled to take place next week.
Deadlines are coming up for registering to vote on the November election. Across the state of Oregon, the deadline is 1 minute to midnight on Tuesday, October 18th. Register online at www.oregonvotes.gov. To do that, an eligible voter must have a valid Oregon driver's license, permit, or ID card. You can also fill out a paper card and put it in the mail or drop it off at a local election office in the county where you live. The deadline for mailing the Oregon voter registration card is a U.S. Postal Service postmark of October 18th. You can also go directly to a county elections office where you live, fill out the card there. Registered voters who have moved need to update their voter registration information online at www.oregonvotes.gov or by filling out a new Oregon voter registration card. Voters can check their registration status online at, once again, www.oregonvotes.gov. Ballots for the November 8th election will be mailed to voters beginning on October 19th. listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jeff Anderson, Stacy Holtman, and Jared Dantzler. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott speak with local peace activist and Vietnam veteran S. Brian Wilson. They'll talk about Paying the Price for Peace, the documentary about his life and work. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour, a program of social and political commentary from a socialist feminist point of view. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein interviews Michael Abelman, one of the early visionaries of the urban agricultural movement. They'll talk about his urban agriculture project, Soul Food Street Farms. And at 11, Health and Healthcare Forum presents excerpts from the recent conference of the Oregon Health